Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day, there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And today we're going to be talking about something that is absolutely critical. Let me say that again, absolutely critical for every business, no matter what size, to be thinking about. And so we're really going to have a great discussion today about security, cybersecurity to be specific, and how to make sure that everything you worked so hard for doesn't go poof, you know. And so please join me in welcoming Rafi Jamgochian to our program today. Welcome, Rafi.
Thank you, Deb. Really excited to be here.
Great. Well, let me tell people a little bit about you. And I did have to get a little chuckle. You have one of the shortest bios that most people provide me with very long bios. And you do have a great deal of history, of experience. But I love it when you send short bios. That's always great fun. So Rafi Jamgochian is the founder of Triada Networks, a boutique cybersecurity and IT services firm based outside of New York City that caters to independent investment firms. Rafi is a certified information systems security professional and a member of the U.S. Secret Service Cyber Crimes Task Force, which that just geeked me out. I was like, oh, but you know, again, Rafi, welcome to our program.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Great. Well, you know, when I was doing my research about you, I did discover that you started doing this at a very young age, but tell us a little bit about how it is that you really did discover that this is your passion in life.
Great. Interesting story. So I started out as a computer geek, learned it as a kid. Mm-hmm. My dad was a computer programmer, and I grew up with it. One of the few probably in the 80s that had a computer at home. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate that way. Mm-hmm. Then when I graduated from university, went into a little bit of engineering first, because I thought I was going to design mm-hmm. computers. I didn't okay. think I was actually going to be in IT. A short time after that, I went into IT for a financial services firm in New York City. It was about a fairly mid-sized investment firm, independent. Mm-hmm. It was a spin out of Citibank. And I didn't know anything about IT. I knew computers. Mm-hmm. I didn't know networks. Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't know security. Mm-hmm. And it was pre-internet. We were just starting to connect the systems mm-hmm. to the internet and learn all about that. So we were building those things from scratch, trying to learn how to, you know, you couldn't go to Staples and buy a firewall mm-hmm. or anything like that. Those things didn't exist. So we really had to learn really from scratch. Mm-hmm. One day while working, this will sound very familiar because the thing still happens. Mm-hmm. Somebody got an email, clicked on a link.
Oh.
And now we have what's called a worm mm-hmm. running around the network. Basically mm-hmm. a worm is a kind of virus that replicates itself and jumps from computer to computer. Mm-hmm. This fascinated me. Mm-hmm. So how do I, what motivated the person to mm-hmm. actually write this thing? Because it wasn't doing anything malicious. It wasn't deleting anything. It wasn't destroying anything. It was just moving around. Mm-hmm. And what motivated that person to do that? How does it function? How did mm-hmm. it get in? How does it replicate itself? Mm-hmm. So that really kind of intrigued me. And that took me down the rabbit hole of cybersecurity.
I love it. You know, and it's been fascinating to watch the evolution of computers. I mean, you know, you mentioned that you were lucky enough to have a computer at home in the 80s. I mean, I'm of a certain age. I never touched a computer until I was in college. It was just we didn't have them. And of course,
that's fairly common.
Yeah. And at that point, they were dumb terminals. You know, you just had a keyboard and a monitor, and then the cable snaked off somewhere to the giant towers. I did work for one of the gigantamous firms that had server rooms. And, you know, and they had the raised floors. We had, you know, the air conditioning that went through there. I mean, all sorts of things. And now in, you know, 40-ish years, they've evolved to things that sit on your wrist. Yes. You know, and I mean, that's about the smallest that I know of. There's probably smaller things, but, you know, and I remember one time not long ago when somebody told me that my iPad could control the space shuttle. I mean, it had that much, you know, and it's just like, holy schmoly, you know, and of course, as that has evolved, the knowledge that hackers have has also evolved, you know, and they've gotten to where, you know, they can hack into that little thing on your wrist and all of those. And it's probably gotten a lot easier simply because there are so many. You know, and when we had the dumb, I mean, you know, obviously when things weren't connected to the internet, unless you did something like open an email, you know, there was no way in for things. But, you know, it's, to me, it really has been fascinating just to see how things have evolved.
Yeah. If you look at the early days, as things get complex, software is made by humans. Humans are prone to make mistakes.
Right.
Regardless of how hard we try and do it, and the simple programs were a lot more rock solid. And now, as we're building these complex applications, they're more prone to failure, more prone to vulnerabilities, which is why we're getting patches and updates all the time. Mm-hmm. Please, people, update your systems.
I wrote a note to talk about.
Those are one of the things that happens all the time. So that's certainly caused it. Now, our connectivity has also opened up. You know, we don't necessarily have to be in the same state, let alone the same country, to do those attacks. In the 80s, it was people that were using phone lines to break into phone systems.
Right.
And now, you know, it can be done from anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and as I was preparing for this, and I mentioned this, you know, before when we were just chatting, we tend to think in a lot of cases that worrying about cybersecurity, keeping our systems safe, all of those things are for big businesses. And of course they are. But it's also just as important for somebody that's like me, who has a home office in my spare bedroom, to be doing all of these things. You know, and one of the things you just mentioned was software updates. You know, and that is one of those. Now, I'm pretty good about doing those, but so many people aren't, because they think, it's not really important, I don't have time. But tell us why those updates are so critical. Yeah, I mean, you mentioned it already, but, you know, why is it that we shouldn't go, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. So to touch on the small business, big business thing real quickly, the thing with the, we hear about the stories on the news of the larger companies getting breached. And the good of that is that it's now kind of in the mainstream, where we've been talking about cybersecurity for 20 years. It's now, in the last few years, certainly been a part of the daily vernacular. But we don't hear about the small businesses that do get breached. And unfortunately, most of them close down after the fact because they aren't able to recover.
Right.
Regarding the issue with updates, updates are massively important. It's how our, you know, in the old days, you had to get, you know, disks and putting and those kind of things to get updates. Now, with the ubiquity of the internet, we're able to update systems all the time. Our thermostats are getting updated. You know, our wristwatches, you talked about wristwatches, those are getting updated. We need to make sure our computer software is getting updated. This is the primary interface that we use to connect to the world. And whenever you are opening an email, clicking on a link, going to a website, running a new application, all those things now become fallible and prone to attack. And bugs are nature of the business. These complex applications are really difficult to maintain. Sometimes that code is really old. That bug's been in there for years. And now it's just been discovered. And it's usually some researcher that's tinkering around and figures it out. Hopefully it's a good guy that figures it out and not a bad guy. Both of those things do happen.
Right. There's white hat hackers as opposed to black hat hackers.
Correct. Like if you heard recently in the news, we had a large number of companies that were breached due to a flaw in Microsoft's email product. Mm-hmm. So with Microsoft, you can either have the email server in your office, mm-hmm. which is what the traditional way used to be for a very long time, mm-hmm. or you can have it in the cloud hosted by them.
Right.
And G Suite, same mm-hmm. idea. Mm-hmm. However, there are a lot of companies that are still running those Microsoft servers in the mm-hmm. Their environments. Mm-hmm. This bug came out that's been there for at least 8 or 9 years. Mm. And now has been discovered. Mm-hmm. As soon as it was discovered, happened to be discovered by a group called Hafnium in China. And thousands of machines got compromised mm-hmm. as a result. Once the other bad guys learned that this was a way to compromise, mm-hmm. they copycatted it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Expanded mm-hmm. and expanded and expanded mm-hmm. until to the fact where even in some cases, the FBI started helping people patch their systems because mm-hmm. it was getting so bad.
Right.
And only a few months before that, we had another one with a company called SolarWinds that was in our defense supply chain and also mm-hmm. our corporate supply chain. Very prominent breach result of that. Mm-hmm. These breaches happen because usually it's because of flawed applications. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those flaws are known ahead of time, mm-hmm. which is why we want to do those patches as soon as mm-hmm. they come out. Sometimes they're not. And unfortunately, we have to deal with this issue as well.
Right. Now, one of the things that I always wonder is, how do we know that the update notice is a real notice and not something that's bad?
It's a good question. That's a tough one, honestly. It was actually the one thing. That was the thing that actually bit the SolarWinds issue. How that hack actually worked was the perpetrators, we believe it's the Russians, but it's mm-hmm. not clear. They broke into SolarWinds somehow. It was mm-hmm. probably through a fish. We'll probably talk about phishing during mm-hmm. our conversation. Mm-hmm. That then was able to modify the code within SolarWinds to put this backdoor. A backdoor mm-hmm. is a way for somebody to get in without you knowing it. Then as SolarWinds sent out updates to their software to, and this is not meant to scare you from not doing updates, but it did send updates to these folks, and that's how they were able. That's how they got compromised. Mm-hmm. A similar situation happened a number of years ago in the Ukraine. Mm. The Ukraine. It's an interesting part of that that the economy there. They all use a certain software package for finances. Think of it as the QuickBooks mm-hmm. for their country, mm-hmm. and everybody uses it. If you're a Ukrainian company, you use this product. Hmm. In fact, if you're doing business in the Ukraine, you're using this product somewhere in Europe.
That makes it a big target.
Absolutely. And so the Russian intelligence unit had gotten into that, mm-hmm. into their update system, and as a result, spread out throughout the Ukraine, which mm-hmm. actually they use as a way to shut the power down. The other aspect of it is it did leak out because there were businesses like mm-hmm. Maersk, one of the largest mm-hmm. shipping companies in the mm-hmm. world, that got affected due to this. Mm-hmm. So small companies got affected, big companies mm-hmm. got affected. Maersk had to shut down their global shipping operation mm-hmm. and rebuild their network from scratch. Mm-hmm. Billions of dollars lost, billions of time lost, mm-hmm. Billions of hours of time lost. So it's been that all those things are definitely true. But again, it's like anything else. You need to get the vaccine ahead of time mm-hmm. Before you get sick. Right. It's the same concept mm-hmm. here. You want to get your patches in mm-hmm. When they happen.
Right.
The best thing to do is leverage the built-in software mm-hmm. on your computer.
Okay.
Make sure that if you're using Windows, mm-hmm. use the Windows update. If you're using Mac, use the Mac update.
Okay.
If you're using Chrome, mm-hmm. Chrome is going to tell you there's going to be a little orange arrow that shows up in the corner.
Don't ignore those little orange arrows or think, oh, they're cute.
I know you have 50 tabs open on your Chrome mm-hmm. browser. You don't want to close and lose your work. Mm-hmm. You need to close them. You need to close that out.
Right. And you can reopen history, folks. Yeah. This is not. Right. You know, I think it's probably one of those things that we all think, well, you know, we're right in the middle of something. You know, like you said, you know, your 50 tabs, you know, oh, I don't want to update Exactly. Microsoft. I don't, you know, right now. And then we forget it. Well, of course, the nice thing is those programs keep going, hello. You know? And so really, folks, don't ignore those. But what about third-party software? I mean, like there's Norton is, you know, one of the most well-known companies. I use AVG. AVG actually reminds me and looks for things, even if it's just, you know, like a software update to run my monitor. I mean, you know, all of those various things. So are those important tools for people to look at?
Yeah, I mean, anything that you're using for AVG and Norton typically are defensive programs, the traditional antivirus. Mm-hmm. The way that antivirus works is that if you know the pattern, if they know the pattern of a virus, mm-hmm. then they're able to detect that virus and then mm-hmm. they stop it. The difficulty is that the viruses are changing their patterns all the time.
Right.
And there's new viruses that come out all the time. So mm-hmm. making sure those systems are regularly updated mm-hmm. almost on the hour mm-hmm. is very important. Most of those have automatic update mechanisms mm-hmm. that happen in the background. But once in a while, they have to change something a little bit more major, and that's when they'll pop up and say, "Hey, you need to reboot your computer." Mm-hmm. I know it's a hassle. Mm-hmm. Please do it.
Right.
There are new antivirus programs now that use more artificial intelligence and behavior. Ooh. So it looks like, so instead of this looking like a program that is that has the pattern of a virus, mm-hmm. it's behaving like a virus, that's when I'm going to shut it down. So mm-hmm. usually now newer products are using a hybrid approach where they're mm-hmm. using a little bit of both, a little bit of signature based, a little bit of behavior based to identify new threats mm-hmm. before they're known to the rest of the
world. Right. You know, and again, folks, it doesn't matter what size company you are. You know, if you have everything, you know, your entire business on right. a computer, you know, then you need to be running right. these programs. And you know, I always tell people, you know, if my computer were to die, there would go my business. You know, and so, of course, the first thing that I do is semi-regular, certainly probably not enough backups. Right. Yes. I mean, and I do, I've got, you know, I mean, that's the cool thing. You can, you know, you get little bitty card size things almost anymore that have terabytes worth of space on them. So, you know, you can do backups and obviously depending on how critical things are. I mean, you might be doing nightly backups. You might be doing, you know, if say you're a CPA during tax season, you might be updating every hour or doing backups every hour. I mean, you know,
can you imagine if you worked on someone's tax return in the middle of the day and then you lost your data? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the interesting thing about, so backups is one of the critical pillars of having a resilient business. We really talk about cyber resilience as a concept mm-hmm. for companies. And that includes the things that we were talking about before, mm-hmm. updates, using protective software, mm-hmm. Educating yourself on, mm-hmm. you know, what to look out for. Mm-hmm. Another piece is backups. The key with backups is there's a number of things that you should look at. First of all, backup in more than one place, mm-hmm. including not in your house.
Right. Yeah, because what if something happens to your house?
Right. And very, very, you know, one of the biggest threats today is ransomware, where mm-hmm. a program runs, scrambles all your data, and then mm-hmm. gives you a ransom to pay them so that mm-hmm. you can get your data back. Many times there, if you have a USB drive that's mm-hmm. connected to your computer that's doing backups, they're going to scramble that too.
Right.
So it's always to also have it mm-hmm. a good connection someplace else as well. You have to look at ultimately what it is that you're protecting, mm-hmm. the value of that to you and to your business, mm-hmm. And then make the appropriate investment to protect that. So you're not going to put in a $10,000 backup system to protect something that's not not $10,000, mm-hmm. But it may be worth spending $50, mm-hmm. $100 a month, whatever it is, mm-hmm. to protect, to make sure that your systems are also mm-hmm. backed up online. So yes, your house burned down, your apartment built down, mm-hmm. burned down, your computer got stolen or ransomed, mm-hmm. you can at least get your data back.
Right. Yeah. Now you mentioned online storage, you know, and so that's the cloud, you know, and the last time I had a computer that just went, bleh, you know, I thought, okay, this is stupid, you know, I'm, and so my programs are on my computer, but most of my data is on the cloud.
Right.
And of course, my rationale for that is it's offsite. And oh golly, I can access it from anywhere. But obviously, if I can access it from everywhere, somebody else could too.
Absolutely.
So how do we, you know, and you know, I think cloud storage is phenomenal. You know, and
it's a boon.
Right, right. You know, but how do we make sure that our cloud storage is safe?
Yeah, I mean, 100% correct. Your cloud storage should not be, and cloud anything doesn't mean automatically secure, and it certainly doesn't automatically mean insecure. Mm-hmm. You have to think about it just as it is for anything else. Mm-hmm. If you have a USB in your pocket and it goes through the wash, you know, it's just that it's at risk, mm-hmm. just as your cloud storage mm-hmm. is at risk. So the way that you access cloud storage is usually with some sort of credentials. It's your username. It's using your password. Mm-hmm. The problem is with regards to passwords mm-hmm. is that depending on most people use the same password in multiple places.
Yeah.
I know I've done it.
Okay. I'm yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mea culpa. I know I've done it. And mm-hmm. and even and you think that you might be clever and say, all right, I'm going to put this other word in front of it.
I'm not going to use my kid's name, my dog's name, my birth date, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Or I'm going to match one kid's name with mm-hmm. another kid's birthday.
Right.
Or I'm going to put Google in front of it because it's my mm-hmm. Google password. Mm-hmm. All these things are patterns that everyone is well aware of.
Right.
They also know about replacing E's with 3's and, mm-hmm. and A's with A's.
Right.
All that stuff is, computers can think a lot faster than we can.
Mm-hmm. They're not looking for words. They're just looking for characters.
They're looking for characters. And if you're using a short password that's regularly used in one place and used someplace else, mm-hmm. for example, LinkedIn was breached a number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That password database is massive.
Mm-hmm.
That what was used is they use those passwords to try to break into other things. Mm-hmm. There's a good chance that you're a LinkedIn user. You're using your business email.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's the same password that you
use. Right, because that's easy to remember, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a problem. So we recommend always use the different password for everything and use it completely random. The way you do that is using a password manager. There are a number of very good ones.
Right. I use LastPass.
LastPass is a very good one. Dashlane is another good mm-hmm. one. Keeper is another good one. And there are various costs and from free to not so free.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you an additional protection because now you don't even have to think about what your password mm-hmm. is. You just need to point and click and page to them. The other part is that not only for the sites that are the most important to you, I would say wherever possible,
mm-hmm.
Especially if you're using a password manager, is to use a multi-factor authentication.
Mm-hmm.
What a multi-factor authentication is that in addition to your username and password, you're mm-hmm. going to get a code or possibly a pop-up on your phone that says approve this login.
Mm-hmm.
Those are very important to do. Mm-hmm. G Suite allows it. Mm-hmm. Outlook allows it. Most of the online cloud storage mm-hmm. Systems provide it. If text messages is the only way that they allow it, mm-hmm. it's better than nothing.
Right.
But it's better to have an application that you can push mm-hmm. or a physical token that's mm-hmm. giving you that code. Those are the ways that you're going to protect yourself from your mm-hmm. data out in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
If you're working for a business, a small business that has an IT services company, this is table stakes. They mm-hmm. should be doing this for you already.
Right.
So it's important. Then these are the things that that people attack. People are attacking mm-hmm. identities, mm-hmm. not computers, more mm-hmm. and more.
Right.
And so it's very important to protect your identity, mm-hmm. your logins online.
Right. Right. Yeah, you mentioned phishing, and that's with a PH. You know, people always get a little confused with that. But, you know, and I was reading, excuse me, you've got great resources on your website. And so I was reading one of your blog posts, and you were talking about man in the middle. And, you know, so describe to us what man in the middle is.
So man in the middle is it's essentially tricking you to... There's actually two parts of man in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
One is where somebody's actually listening in on the stream
mm-hmm.
of information that goes between two people.
Mm-hmm.
And if your traffic isn't secure,
mm-hmm.
then that person could, it's like listening. It's like hearing somebody in mm-hmm. the mall overhearing something.
Right.
If somebody is encrypting that traffic, it's a little bit harder for mm-hmm. that to do that, but there's also tricks.
Mm-hmm.
An example is I have a little device. It's called a pineapple. It used to look like a pineapple. It no longer does. It now just has a sticker of a pineapple on it. Mm-hmm. It's a little Wi-Fi device. I use it in demonstrations where I can walk into a coffee shop and pretend to be the coffee shop's Wi-Fi network. Uh-huh. So now I trick you to connect to my my connection, and then I connect to the internet through the Wi-Fi of the coffee shop. Now I have full visibility of your traffic. That's a man in the middle, or sometimes a machine in the middle is also another way that they say that. But that's a way to do that. I'm listening to you on one ear and I'm spitting it out on the other end. You have no idea that I'm in the middle of this.
Yeah, because I just went to Starbucks and clicked, you know, use their network.
Right, exactly. And so because it's an open Wi-Fi network, everything is in the clear. So it becomes important to use things like VPNs when you're in the public, definitely don't do your banking when you're sitting in a car. Right. You know, be careful about what you're in. You know, look around you. Sometimes there's somebody looking over your shoulder. I mean, we're not many of us are going to coffee shops. Right. Yeah.
There's like two people in there.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And so it's definitely do that. Travel's going to happen again. Airports are another place that that these things are you're at risk where folks are listening in on what you're doing.
Right.
Phishing is the number one way that companies are getting breached. We're kind of on there's a large amount of effort in terms of trying to raise awareness of that. And phishing comes in a couple of forms, but typically it's somebody tricking you to do something that you weren't expecting to do. So that could be a fake invoice that they're asking you to open.
Right.
It could be hey, your password's about to expire. Mm-hmm. Click on this link to update your password. Your bank is never going to ask you to do that.
Mm-hmm. And the IRS is never going to do this either, folks.
No, the IRS isn't sending you emails for any of that. They're not calling you on the phone either to say that you're, that's the
they
other
do the mail, the good old fashioned mail.
Correct. So the other thing is phishing, which is voice phishing, where somebody is actually calling you to trick you into doing something. Oh, okay. Something.
Yeah. Hello. We're updating our COVID records. Please give us your social security number.
Yes. Yes. Exactly right. Or smishing, which is the same thing through SMS, through text messages. Mm-hmm. So all of these are mechanisms to trick you to do that. It's parts of social engineering. A social engineer could be somebody calling you on the phone, letting you, asking you to come in. It could be somebody that is tailgating you to the office that didn't swipe in. It could be somebody that is tricking your receptionist to let them into an area that they otherwise don't have access to. All those things are parts of social engineering. Phishing, we typically think of email phishing, and then there's targeted phishing, which is looking specifically, I'm sending it to Deb Cryer to Nord to identify something specific to them. Or it could be something that's broader, that's basically catching a wide net to see, let's see who clicks on this and we can get them caught.
Right.
So there are two really big things that are happening with phishing. One is business email compromise, which is somebody getting your credentials and then using your email to disseminate what they're doing. We're seeing a lot of proliferation of this now, as well as impersonations, CEO impersonations particularly, where they look on your website, they learn who your CEO is, say your CEO is, Mary Jones, and they create a new email account called maryjones@gmail.com or some function of that. And they send an email to you from that account to your work account saying, hey, I'm really busy. I'm in a meeting. Can you go do this? Or can you go transfer money to this new account? Another common trick now, we've had a number of folks reach out to us after the fact, where they've identified a transaction taking place. Think about in your personal life, you might have a real estate transaction that you're doing. A lot of that stuff is done by wire nowadays, not checks. Same thing with corporate deals. And they get in the middle of it, and then now they give you new wiring instructions. Okay, if anybody ever tells you, these are my new wiring instructions, be dubious.
Yeah. Danger, danger.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Pick up the phone and call them and say, hey, did you send this? Mm-hmm. Because there's a good chance that somebody's gotten in the middle of a conversation and now is acting on behalf of the person in a malicious way.
Right. Yeah, I got one. I mean, you know, I get multiple ones every day. DocuSign. You have a DocuSign too. Mm-hmm. You know, the only person that I do DocuSign with is my accountant, and she has a secure portal. So, you know, but yeah, so that's one of the ones. But I got one this morning that was from Amazon. And it was just confirming my order. And, you know, and the funny thing was it actually got caught in my spam folder. And so, you know, but I order from Amazon fairly often. And so I'm looking at it thinking, what have I forgotten I ordered? And, yeah. You know, I'm like, well, wait. And it was a fairly common product. I don't even remember what the product was, but of course it was shipping to someone I didn't know. And so your first thought would have been to click that and either say, okay, this was not my order, or I don't know who that person was.
Right.
And, you know, I do, you know, fancy myself as being somewhat smart about this. And so what I did was I looked at who the actual sender was,
right.
The email address, which of course was not Amazon. And it was like, that delete. But, you know, they're so sophisticated with these things. And I think that's where so many people get caught.
Yeah. And it used to be that we can say that, hey, if it looks a little funny or the grammar's a little off, you know, those are tells.
Right.
They're getting better at that. Mm-hmm. In fact,
they're not misspelling Amazon anymore.
No, exactly. And they have whole companies that actually help them write this stuff and get their English better, that they outsourced it. So there's a whole business ecosystem around this kind of thing. In fact, we use, you know, I'm gonna give you a little thing when we test clients and prospects, we use phishing as an example because it's such a wide issue. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that we are educating people. We use Amazon orders as a major one. That's a very common one, especially now with sometimes the delays in delivery.
Right.
Something and a couple of days later and like, oh, there's just something coming. Mm-hmm. Let me look at this. Always when you see something like that, the other thing, you did the right thing looking at who the sender is. Mm-hmm. Sometimes on mobile devices, that's hard to look at. You know, our instant, we want to do something instantly. It's our nature of things. I'm the same way. I see an alert on my phone. I want to deal with it right away. Mm-hmm. Take a deep breath, wait for you to get back to your computer, make sure that you're looking at it properly. Mm-hmm. Second thing is that if you do see an alert like that on Amazon, chances are it's also in your account if it's real.
Right. So go to your account.
Open up your account. Mm-hmm. Same thing with your bank. Mm-hmm. Log into your bank. Never use the links on the website. Mm-hmm. Never use the links on the emails that show up. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I mean, that's the thing is just go directly to your account, either, you know, online or call them. You know, I frequently, maybe once a month, get calls from my health insurance company. You know, I've had some medical issues and so they're calling to make sure everything's okay. Okay. You know, that's nice. But of course, the first thing they say is we need you to verify your birth date and your mailing address. And I never, ever do it. I mean, even when caller ID is showing that it is from them, I always say, you know, I'm fine. I don't, you know, everything's going well. However, I will call you back using the number on my card. And almost always I get click. then I know, no, this wasn't a real call. And if it's a real call, they will say, you know, okay, that's great. Here's the information that you need to give them, you know, when you call. So that way, you know, it's, and same thing with your bank, you know, and all of those other places, your credit cards. I mean, you know, how many times have we, you know, either received a notice or gotten a phone call, you know, hey, your account has been breached. We're going to fix it for you. So, but you have to give us your information first. And I'm like, but you should already have my information.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it's interesting. My wife doesn't like it when I do this, but I'll start, especially when we get the voice calls from usually the IRS or something.
No, you play with them.
I do play with them. Yes. I do play with them. I make up a name. Mm-hmm. I make up a social security number. Uh-huh. I go down the whole rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. I I feel like if I'm wasting their time, mm-hmm. That's one less person
right.
they're hitting.
Yep.
And ultimately, these are things that are going to prevent it from happening. Mm-hmm. It's partly my own amusement, but it's mm-hmm. also kind of unfortunately, mm-hmm. they prey on people who have their economic situation is probably not great.
Right.
And so they're hiring them at pennies mm-hmm. To do these nefarious right. things.
Yeah, the people making the calls are just the hired people. For yeah. most part, they probably have no idea what's really happening.
No, they do. I think they do.
Well, yeah. I mean, I kind of wonder if I was told, you need to call these people and ask them to verify their social security number. I would hope I'd think, I don't yeah. know about
especially
that.
When they're saying, like, I'm cheap so-and-so. Mm-hmm. In a thick accent
right.
from your local police department.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the one of the other common places, and I see this all the time, is social media and specifically Facebook. I mean, the nice thing about LinkedIn is, because we're posting more business there, you just don't see these things, but I'm on Facebook a lot and I'm always seeing the people who are forwarding the emails that are, do such and such and you'll be entered into this drawing or do such and such and you'll win this. And of course you look and there's, again, a slight misspelling, little things like that. And I always tell people, folks, I had a political science professor and she would always tell us, Tonstoffel. And we'd all look at her and go, eh. And she said, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And yes, there are drawings and I mean, we do them. I mean, all those various things, but if it seems too good to be true,
yeah.
it probably is. So stop forwarding those. And people say, well, what's the harm in forwarding it? Well, it might not have hurt you, but I might've forwarded it to someone who didn't understand and actually clicked the link.
Right.
And then that put malware on their system or, all those various things. I'm always seeing people that, oh my God, my Facebook account has been hacked. Well, then stop forwarding that stuff.
Right. Yeah. And so social media, you touched a little bit on social media. Social media is a ripe area where people are finding out things mm-hmm. about you. If you go back a few years when Sarah Palin's email account was compromised. Mm-hmm. They broke in because they were able to reset her password mm-hmm. because her reset information was what high school she graduated from
right.
and some other thing that was public, mm-hmm. the dog's name or whatever. And so we need to be careful about mm-hmm. the information we share online. That's if it's on Facebook, maybe only your friends can see it. There's a good chance that everybody else.
I tell people, no, just because you have your privacy settings at friends, nah, public is public.
And those change all the time. And they change it all the time. Mm-hmm. So, and Facebook is getting more and more scrutiny lately on mm-hmm. their privacy policies, but if it's out there, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the things, that's the information they're using mm-hmm. in order to attack you. That's how they find, okay, who's your CEO on LinkedIn? And then that's how they use mm-hmm. that information. Mm-hmm. So any of that information.
You're putting your kids' names on your Facebook posts. And then if you 100%. Use your kid's name as your password.
Yeah. And you just posted that it's their birthday. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, now, mm-hmm. there's a funny video done by Jimmy Kimmel, late night show,
mm-hmm.
that he does kind of a man in the street about passwords. Mm-hmm. You Google it, it's very interesting. But it basically says, they walk up to somebody and say, tell me your password. And it's mm-hmm. not a secret. I'm not going to tell you my password.
Right.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So if you were going to make a password, what would you do? Oh, I would, I pick my, my mother's name. Mm-hmm. What's your mother's name? It's Martha. Oh, okay.
Right. And you're and like,
then followed by like my, zip code or something like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, what's your zip code? Yeah, and mm-hmm. then they would give it that. It's like, okay, mm-hmm. so your password is Martha, 12345. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, see, and then realize what they just did.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. we're fallible. That's mm-hmm. why we need to have sometimes these other tools and mnemonics to figure things out.
And when all of these systems suggest passwords, a lot of times they are the gobbledygook passwords. They're a mix of characters, lowercase, all these various things. And of course, my immediate thought is, must change, because I can't remember that, right?
Right.
Well, that's where using programs like LastPass and all of those things, that's why you use those. So you can keep those gobbledygook, makes absolutely no right. sense, but are really unhackable yes. or closer, you know, because if they have to work at it, they're going to go to somebody else that they don't have to work so hard at. I mean, that is basically what it comes down to.
Exactly. And the other thing that those password managers do that you mm-hmm. don't really think about is, let's say you have your LinkedIn password mm-hmm. in stored in LastPass.
Right.
And you click on a link, or you mm-hmm. mistype the word LinkedIn mm-hmm. when you're typing in LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Let's say right. you go to LinkedIn or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know. LastPass is not going to detect that as mm-hmm. the right website to right. put your password information into. Mm-hmm. So it's another check. Mm-hmm. The other thing that those password managers are doing is that if your accounts get, many of these do this, that if your account gets found on the dark web, mm-hmm. The dark web is kind of this secret internet, mm-hmm. kind of secret, but not really. Because
I know. We all know it's there, but.
You all know it's there. It's on the internet. It's just mm-hmm. the way you get to it is kind of a, you know, little bit nerdy way. Mm-hmm. And, but there's a lot of these, markets on there that sell your information online, mm-hmm. credit card information and mm-hmm. passwords, et cetera. And these companies like LastPass will, usually subscribe to some sort of data feeds from mm-hmm. companies that mine that information mm-hmm. for good. So they say, okay, we found, Rafi's, password from LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And we're gonna send it to you so that you can check it to make sure that's not the password that he's currently mm-hmm. using. And so this way it'll identify and say, hey, you may want to change these passwords. Right. So if you see those things pop up in your password mm-hmm. manager, it's a good idea to make those changes mm-hmm. as well.
Right. You know, and then of course, one of the other basics with passwords, and I'm really bad at this, is we need to change them. You know, the password that we used 10 years ago probably shouldn't still be the same password.
Yes. Yeah, and in business, when passwords were short and mm-hmm. we only had 8 characters to do passwords right. and it didn't have complexity, mm-hmm. Then it was very important to change passwords mm-hmm. often. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're making long passwords mm-hmm. that are easy to remember, hard mm-hmm. to guess, mm-hmm. especially phrases, if you're going to do passwords yourself, mm-hmm. not in a password manager, use phrases. Mm-hmm. You know, think passages in your book, in right. a book, random words that mm-hmm. strung together. That's mm-hmm. my favorite. When you do that, it's less important to change it that often. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Every 90 days is probably enough, or mm-hmm. twice a year is probably enough. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing short passwords, first, don't do short passwords. It's a lot easier to break short passwords. Mm-hmm. The reason is that if you look at a computer can break an 8 character password in seconds.
Right.
The longer you make it, the harder it is. If you get mm-hmm. to like 20 characters, we're talking about hundreds of years before mm-hmm. they can crack your password. So if you're changing it once a year, mm-hmm. it's not going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. However, if your password is obviously mm-hmm. in a breach, you want to change it right away.
Right. You know, and there are other basic things that you know, a lot of times people just don't stop to think about. You know, I design websites and I design them on WordPress. And so when you set up a new one, it always automatically gives you a login as admin.
Yes.
Get rid of that. Don't just change it, folks. Delete it. You know, get it completely out of there. Now, your privilege is still as an administrator. So don't think, oh, you know, but yeah, get rid of that admin login. And I use a program on all of my WordPress sites called WordFence. And yes. about once a month, WordFence will say, you know, so-and-so in such an, or, you know, IP address in such and such country, just tried 20 times or, you know, whatever my default is to log in as admin.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was just obviously trying random numbers. And then after 20 times it went, eh. Yep. You know, but yeah, I mean, you know, just those are, you know, the things that are easy to do, but we all think, you know, it's not worth it. Well, yes, it is. I mean, you know, that somebody like me, I mean, all someone would have to do would be to get my data and delete it and get access to my bank account, and there would go my company. I mean, that's that really is right. anything that, you know, and so, I mean, that's what we need to think about, folks, is, you know, what's kind of the least common denominator, and, you know, what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen?
Yeah. So think about how a hacker would think, and sometimes mm-hmm. it's a little bit tricky, but think about, okay, where are my crown jewels? All right. Mm-hmm. Let's start with your bank account. Your bank account, that's obviously very important to you, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important that you protect that. Mm-hmm. Some banks have tokens, mm-hmm. some don't. They have other ways to identify mm-hmm. fraud. So let's say you want to get into my bank account. Mm-hmm. You need to know my username mm-hmm. and you need to know my password.
Right.
So let's say you wanted to try to reset my username and password. Most mm-hmm. of the time, our accounts are tied to our cell phones and our mm-hmm. email account.
Right.
So our email, we don't think about how critical email access is, mm-hmm. but it's kind of the gateway to all of these things. Mm-hmm. If they can't get to your account, if they can get to your email, mm-hmm. they now have access to nearly everything.
Right.
Which is why we need to have these other factors like mm-hmm. cell phone numbers or tokens mm-hmm. and what have you. So if you think a little bit that way, you realize why, one, password reuse is a bad thing, mm-hmm. but also because how important it is to protect things like your mm-hmm. email account and your phone. So now I've phished your email account. So I've now accessed your email account. Now I can reset your bank credentials. Mm-hmm. Is there something else that I need to do in order mm-hmm. to do that? So those are the things we kind of think about in mm-hmm. order to get in. Where else is my crown jewels?
Right.
Well, my data. So mm-hmm. my data is on my mm-hmm. computer. It's on my laptop. It's locked away. All right. Mm-hmm. So if that laptop was lost, could they get access mm-hmm. to your data?
Right.
They can pull your hard drive out. They mm-hmm. can access your files. So most all modern computers, Windows 10, Mac, current Macs, all have a way to do. My Macs call it File Vault, or Secure Vault, and mm-hmm. then PCs call it BitLocker. Mm-hmm. If you just type in that into your search bar in each of those computers, you'll get to the right settings. Mm-hmm. This will encrypt the system on your mm-hmm. computer, so that if that hard drive is ever removed from that computer, mm-hmm. it can't be used someplace else.
Right,
it can't be accessed.
Right.
So what's the other way they can get access to your data? Well, they can access your Dropbox account or your mm-hmm. Google Drive account or whatever. So you make sure you add two-factor to that site. Right.
And don't think, oh, what? Why are they bothering me with this? Just do it.
it is an extra step. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's just a pop-up on your phone and you hit approve.
Right.
Maybe you have to enter a 5-digit code mm-hmm. that pops up. Yes, it's inconvenient. Yes, it takes a couple extra clicks mm-hmm. or time. It's very important.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and obviously this isn't just for your business. I mean, this is your personal, you know, because your personal bank account may be, you know, obviously more critical than your business bank account, you know, your credit cards, all of those things. You know, I was just thinking if, say, you're a student and your doctoral thesis, you know, I mean, there's so many things that if somebody were to change, hold hostage, you know, for ransomware, things like that, you know, it really would just totally dramatically change things for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Rafi, we've only got about 10 minutes left. And one of the things that I really wanted to talk about is the fact that, you know, in the last year, everybody started working from home, you mm-hmm. know, and many businesses, small and large, are going to continue that. And I can just imagine that when this first started, every IT person in the world on the good side went, oh my God, this is going to be a disaster. And all the bad guys went, woohoo. Because, you know, you could control things when you were in an office.
Yeah.
But now that, you know, people dutifully took their little laptops home and are just plugging them into, you know, their home Wi-Fi, maybe their neighbor's Wi-Fi, you know, all of those various things. So what are some tips for people who are now working from home?
Yeah, I had a full head of dark hair in last January. Mm-hmm. So it was certainly a tricky thing. And depending on the business, some businesses were really well prepared for that mm-hmm. just because of the nature of mm-hmm. Of their work, and then others that were not.
Right.
And what we saw was kind of both ends of that mm-hmm. spectrum. The companies that had kind of embraced a a zero trust model. Not really. So zero trust is a concept in technology where basically you don't trust the computer, you don't trust the network it's on, you don't trust the person until it figures out like all these things are correct. Then it gives access to just the information that it's more than that, but I'm simplifying it. If you were already down that road and kind of thinking that way and had architected things that way, you were already in pretty good shape. However, many companies were not. So what happened? So you now take your laptop home. It's now on your home network with your internet provider. You need to access your information to the office. You're now connecting usually through an office VPN back into the office. Now your computer has full access to your office network, just as if it's inside.
Right.
But your also computer also has access to your entire home network, including all of your other devices in your house. That's your thermostat. That's your other computers. It's the Xbox that your kids are using. All that stuff.
Your TV. I mean, amazing how many things are on Wi-Fi anymore.
Exactly. And so now you potentially bring, it's as if you now plugged in all that stuff into your office network. Any of those things are potentially at risk. So if you're not setting things up correctly in order to identify where your where your avenues of attack are, it can be very, you may be opening yourself up to a greater amount of risk than you're used to.
Right.
Think of it as, you know, your network plugs in your office are now on the outside of your company, and you probably can just plug in and say, "Hey, I'm in your network." And so, and the re-architecting of that can be very time consuming, but there are ways that you can actually get around that for the time being, or protect yourself. And so, small businesses, I would probably say, if you're looking at, you know, you're a company that's 5, 10, you know, 20 employees, reach out to a local IT company and ask them, how can I protect my employees at home when they're working?
Right.
The other parts of what we talked about, because of the lack of being in the next cubicle, hey, did you get that weird email? Did you also get that weird email? Yeah, I got it too. Yeah, it looks like it's fake. That stuff stops when you're not in the same room anymore. And so you have to understand that there's some other risks that at play, even though you may already have protections in place for them. So it becomes a conversation and education piece for your employees to understand what are the things in their home that might be at risk, but also, you know, work with somebody to maybe get those things dialed in. If you're a smaller company, that maybe IT company is not going to look at me because I'm under 5 employees, or I'm only a solo practitioner or whatever. There are things that you can do too. And it's, again, it goes back to some of the fundamentals that we talked about. Using two-factor authentication, encrypting your system, maybe using a VPN, even from home, so that your internet provider can't see what's happening, and in your office, the people in your home can't also see what you're doing on your laptop. Don't let your kids use your laptop for their schoolwork, and vice versa.
Or to play games.
Or use your home computer, or don't use the kids' school computer for work. So all those things become in play, especially in the work at home scenario.
Right. You know, and of course, one of the things that we absolutely have to do is, you know, set your Wi-Fi router. That's got to have a good password. You know, you just aside from anything, you don't want your neighbors using it. But it's also interesting because a lot of the services now provide a second login for your guests.
Yes.
And sometimes that has no security, you know, and so change that. You know, it's easy enough to change these things. So even if, you know, you've got that and you have guests, well, fine, just, you know, give them a different password, you know, and it does make it nice that there are two different levels, you know, and it's, I'm sure that somebody can still hack through and everything, but again, it takes more time. So they're going to go back to somebody who's easier.
Look, home routers are tricky because they tend to be not updated. They tend to be you sit around until they break,
right?
Then you call the cable company to replace it.
Change the password when they replace it.
You don't change the default passwords. You don't change all those things are important to do. If your company, a lot of the larger firms, they're actually saying, look, you can't use that we're going to give you a separate connection, mm-hmm. or especially now that it's been a year.
Mm-hmm. And we know they're staying home.
You know, they're staying, you know, we're seeing, you know, I think, Jamie Dimon from Chase said this mm-hmm. past week, we're going to use 60% of our seats that, going forward, mm-hmm. you know, that's a massive shift in the mm-hmm. in workforce, where now you're looking at, mm-hmm. okay, so now how do we protect those people from home? Mm-hmm. Now I bank with Chase. So that's my bank, right. Potentially my bank mm-hmm. teller working from home. Mm-hmm. I want to make sure that they have a secure.
Right. I don't want some going to them, to my account.
Exactly. And we've been dealing with that all year as well, right? So all these folks that are now call centers, what have you, mm-hmm. working from home, that have access to a lot of this mm-hmm. information. And it's important for business owners to ask the questions to their professionals, mm-hmm. to make sure that they're actually doing those things to lock it down. Because mm-hmm. if you're not pushing back on it, mm-hmm. There's a good chance that they're just taking the easy way out and just mm-hmm. saying, all right, I'll just connect.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, and we all, you know, as I've said, we all need to be thinking about this, whether we're small or large. And, you know, we might think, oh, you know, a $100 piece of software every year to me. Okay. The $100 piece of software that makes things a little bit more difficult, it really is saving your business, you know, and so just think about that and, you know, or making your passwords more complicated, changing your passwords more frequently, you know, all of those various things are pretty simple steps to take. But, you know, if somebody needs more help, how can they reach out to you and what services do you provide?
Yeah, so we focus on small companies. Most of our clients do not have a technology person in the house, or if they are, it's somebody maybe a little bit more technical, but is doing another role. Or
mm-hmm. yeah, they're the sales manager, and can you install this software?
Or it's the youngest guy in mm-hmm. in the room, and so that, you know, they assume that they know the technology mm-hmm. a little bit better. So you can obviously reach out to us. And if we're not in your area, or we have a vast network of people mm-hmm. that we can always refer you to. But that would be one way. Mm-hmm. So our website is triadanet.com. Educate yourself about, you know, what the risks are. We put out a book this past year, along with 30 other cybersecurity experts.
Mm-hmm. And you've got a great chapter in it.
Thank you. So the book is called On Thin Ice. It's available on Amazon. If you go to my website /cybersecuritybook, mm-hmm. you'll actually, you can fill out a form and I'll send you a copy. But each chapter is dedicated to a specific topic. Mine's the last chapter, which is talking about security frameworks, which mm-hmm. is a little bit what we think about as kind of the framework of how mm-hmm. How we set up a security program at a company mm-hmm, mm-hmm. so that we manage to that. So this way that all your decisions kind of go through that filter rather than just trying to bolt security on as an afterthought. Mm-hmm. So all those things are parts of doing the right thing in order to move forward. But yeah, please reach out to us mm-hmm. if you have any questions. We'd be happy to at least point you in the right direction.
Right. Yeah. You know, and for anybody thinking, well, I'm too little for anybody to even mess with, the little are probably a lot easier to get into.
Yes.
And you add a whole bunch of little ones together. And, you know, that's, and so please, folks, you know, don't think, well, I'm too little to bother with this.
60% of businesses that suffer, small businesses that suffer a breach, never come back into business.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, we have enough things that are going against us as a small business owner. Yeah. So, you know, these are some pretty simple things to change. So again, your website is triadanet.com. So that's triadanet.com. And the book is On Thin Ice. Great information there. So Rafi, do you have any final thoughts that you want to leave everyone with?
You know, think before you click. You know, again, we're going to go back to the same fundamentals. Think mm-hmm. before you click, educate your other employees as mm-hmm. well, from all walks. It doesn't have to be the CEO has to also do the same thing that the mm-hmm. the entry level person does.
Right.
It's very important. Sometimes we bypass the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
Important that he's also doing mm-hmm. it. That's you. Don't, you know, make sure that you're doing the same things. Lead by example. Passwords. very critical. Add multi-factor authentication. Be careful of the networks that you use. There are ways to protect yourself when you're traveling and as also from home. So, you know, take consideration when you're doing all that and keep your systems up to date.
Perfect. I love it. I love it. Well, I've been having a fascinating discussion with Rafi Jamgotchian, and I can't wait to do it again because sadly, this is something that continues. I mean, you know, and so we should do this once a year to kind of update people as to what's going on. So I can't wait to do that. But until then, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.